Blog Talk Radio.
Sports Kingdom, your host Julian Bravo, the King, and what big news is coming out of not only the wrestling world but the basketball world as well today. But no one is necessarily talking about the upcoming draft today. Within days, gonna talk about that first, give you a snippet of my best available players, and then go henceforth on with a NBA mock draft special, which should air sometime this weekend, most likely. And so, happy to be here, talk about all that. And whatever you want to talk about, feel free to call in and share the number on Twitter. You can dial in 563-999-3522. Again, 563-999-3522 is the number. So feel free to call and talk about CM Punk, Ja Morant, or some of what I'm going to talk about today, leading off with the NBA draft. Going to talk and rank after watching as much as I could, painfully could. No, just kidding. I'm trying to pull up the NBA draft board here, according to NBA.com. So, of course, we have Victor Wembanyama coming off the board first, but they're asking me who's going to be the first player taken off the board as the best available. I see it. And I'm not withering away here. I'm not going to withdraw my pick by saying I think Scoot Henderson is very much the best player in this year's NBA draft. I think Scoot has a really good body of work athletically, and he's arguably the most athletic player in this year's NBA draft. As I've mentioned, is very athletically explosive, very gifted in the sense that he can also penetrate and be a very solid playmaker. He really, like I said before, won't go as far as say is going to win an early MVP award like Derrick Rose, but I think he's sort of up there. I think he's going to be a really good player for a long time. And there are stretches where he could possibly go ahead, try and shoot the ball as if he's Steph Curry. That's like most players, however, you see in any sort of local gym, whereas today many players are just trying to hone their three, but at the same time, I guess don't realize that the Steph Curry shot only works for some, and in the case of Scoot Henderson, I think he's obviously just going to work on that and become a much better shooter from outside range. Other than that, though, he has a nice shot going on from mid-range, and really the sky's the limit, I feel, for Scoot Henderson. As I got Scoot Henderson as the first best available. Yet again, I'll just go over the lottery, most particularly the best available in the lottery. So up to pick number 14, I'll rank and give give my analysis on 14 players in best available players in this year's lottery. And so the second player off the board for me has to be, I really got to give it up to him, even though I'm not really much of a fan. It's Victor Wembanyama going second. In terms of my best available, I think instead of what I said before, it's still going to be a multi-time all-star in the NBA and stand out to be 7'5", believe it or not. 7'5", he surprised me. Thought he was 7'4", but in the case of Wembanyama at 7'4", is I think destined to find good spots, good type of range in Greg Popovich's system. I think Greg Popovich will start him off slowly, of course, and even though many ESPN film or production trucks and stuff will arrive on site for very well. Victor Wembanyama's first game in the NBA and be hyped to be a sensation right off the bat, but I think with Pop, he'll nonetheless start off pretty slow and make his way up through the ranks, of course, and like I said, eventually become an all-star. Do I think he's going to be one of the best peer scorers as I see it now? He was the most productive, according to the French league he was in, averaged 21 points per game, along with 10 rebounds, along with a good amount of assists. He was the most productive, but then again, you look closely at his scoring stats, shooting stats. Something he has to work on, and as a bona fide number one overall pick, they're saying he has to obviously stand out more in certain areas, even though he's much more, as you'd say, right now, a solid all-around player with good all-star potential, I believe, going to the Spurs. The third best available, and now this is when things start to get more interesting, I feel. This board here doesn't really have many of the players I thought out before, but he's actually right here. If I had to give him a grade in terms of being the third best, I gotta say I really like All-Star Thompson more than, well, they got his name duplicated twice here, but I like Ausar Thompson better than his brother, Eamon Thompson, this yet again, another brother duo. We've seen it with the King brothers and the Zellers and, so much more. And interestingly enough, they're both projected in the lottery, although with Eamon going ahead of Ausar, I still feel Ausar has much more upside than Eamon. Eamon, I think, has really just let everything speak for itself down at the G League Ignite. I think Eamon he's already have proven potential to stand out in certain areas, but not as good as Ausar. I think Ausar, with just more of, I feel, athleticism and length to his frame, and then add on the fact that even though he wasn't, I guess you'd say more as productive. I guess that's the reason why Eamon Thompson gets the nod for some is because he could very much be more productive back in the G League. But with his brother Ausar, I think he's and actually no, like we're the Warriors here. The Warriors are not here. It's been reported that the Warriors are gonna trade to at least the number 7 overall pick with Kuminga and take a possible big with Mike Dunleavy Jr. being reported to now be the general manager replacing Bob Myers of the Golden State Warriors. Find it really interesting that this did occur. And Mike Dunleavy, as I can recall, has playing relations with Stephen Curry in his playing career. And Mike Dunleavy has jumped from team to team pretty much as a solid shooter overall. Would I say he sure filled in the void at the time. The Bulls were pretty hot with Derrick Rose, Butler, and then Korver. Did he fill in for Korver? I mean, Korver, man, I can't believe that. And he obviously went through a tragedy, which is why he left the NBA eventually, but with the pandemic. But with Dunleavy, it's just, definitely couldn't fill that void, and things obviously have turned out the way they are now in Chicago, and not so much of a fan of their front office either. I think Zach LaVine, another name on the radar. I think the Bulls obviously just gotta shake things up. I do like some of their players, like Patrick, Kobe White. I think he has a chance to be a possible starter in the league at this point in his career. Give him a shot, see what he's made of as a possible starter in Chicago. And then if we're talking yet again another team that could use a big just like Golden State, it's the Chicago Bulls, I feel, with Nikola Vucevic leaving. I think you add in a player like the Bulls. If we look at the Bulls, they're not in the lottery necessarily, but I mean, I'm pretty sure, however, they're a little outside of it, and they can very much, a lot of people are talking about, Vucevic is a good player. It's just, it's pretty much time for Chicago to part ways with someone who very much could contend, I feel, at this point, and not really provide much of the youth at the center position right next to Patrick. And so, many people talk about one offensive big in the draft who's not on this board. But then another, I don't think he would quite fit necessarily into the picture over in Chicago possibly, but Derek Lively's been said to be a name to keep an eye out for. I'm not necessarily sure if I'm too much of a fan of him, but, you know, certainly one of the better defenders, at least, I mean, I don't think, especially in this year's draft, could find too many good defenders down low at the center position. Something, of course, I believe Miami lacked, despite their size there in the front court. And then Golden State, along with, you could say Chicago, even though Chicago already has Patrick, so you figure they could very much build a defensive front court. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, really. It's just, of course, rare in the NBA. You see that, and I think it's very much, well, a case that Derek Lively could very well much play coming out of Duke with Williams in the front court. And, Zan, you know, the Bulls would probably have to find some volume scorers outside in terms of wings, you know, find a good two and three to play alongside at least White as well, who could facilitate at the very least. So I'm not necessarily saying that's all he could do. I think there's some untapped potential there, just still with White, untapped to minutes, so to speak. And so, I think overall, All-Star Thompson has tremendous upside. But I say he's ready yet. No, I think it's going to take some time for him to develop. I think he's worth giving a try over Amen. I think Amen's just not going to, unfortunately, pan out as much as his brother, I feel. So, Thompson. All-Star Thompson, more ready at number three. Number four, now let's see if we have some calls. I know we tweeted out earlier that we talked some calls with CM Punk and John Morant. No. All right, so this just in, some Sixer news for me. The Sixers would like to bring back, reportedly from Jake Fisher, Paul Reed, Georges Niang, and Jalen McDaniels. I'm trying to think who else they should possibly bring back. They're not gonna. I guess that's fine. I don't know about Jalen. Jalen really to me could draw out some trade value. Maybe they just fear come back and I don't know. I just wasn't so high on Jalen, and Sixers did acquire him, but I didn't know he was a free agent. I just felt maybe towards this offseason the Sixers could try at least with Jalen McDaniels or some others to go ahead get a second round pick, because it's also been reported they're going to get a second round pick in return for. Either one of their assets they have picked up. And so, number four, let's go a little bit down the draft board here. We got All-Star, real high. I really like Grady Dick. Grady Dick's interesting prospect. Yeah, there they are. I just want to really point out some sleepers. They're really not here, so I got to, of course, refresh the page and such. They could call in, of course, and tell me who you think's some of the best available in this year's NBA draft. Yet again, the NBA draft is on the 22nd of June, so June 16th, about 6 days from now, the NBA draft will be going live from New York. I just don't think they should do it from New York any longer, but they do. Yeah, I gotta refresh here, so hang on. NBA mock draft. All right, well, I guess I can't disregard his name any longer. Brandon Miller, number 4. Am I so big of a fan? To a degree. I think compared to Rudy Gay and Danny Granger, I could very much see him falling between Danny Granger. Better yet, you know, I really do see him. I mean, if he were to wow me at the next level, I'd go as far as to say Danny Granger and possibly even Paul George. I think Brandon Miller is expected to land at number 2. I think that's just the type of player you're going to get. I think he's going to be the type of number 2 player on your team that goes out, firstly, shoot the ball from 3. He can shoot from 3 tremendously well as being the SEC player of the year, first freshman to accomplish that. And so really, I think a valuable pick for anyone that receives Brandon Miller. Brandon Miller led Alabama to a pretty solid run this year. Did I think they're going to go even farther than they did? Yeah, and they were ranked number 1 for a while, and especially a college freshman be able to, through some of the adversity last year, take Alabama from his shoulders and take Alabama all the way to the position they did. I think Brandon Miller did a solid job nonetheless. He has some other pretty solid teammates, which I'll get to a little later on this weekend on the NBA mock draft special show. And so, but possible, I think it's possible, one of the other Alabama players have go on to a much better career, but in the sense that they can very much just better themselves and who knows, be as better, even as much better than the Brandon Miller, so to speak. I think Brandon Miller, he needs to go somewhere that's gonna fit him. He fit Alabama. He made the perfect and right commitment to Alabama, I felt, and now it just I think it really all hinges. I think he goes to the Hornets, who are now being sold from Michael Jordan over to a ownership group after 13 years in Charlotte. If he goes to Charlotte, I don't think that's possibly the best deal there. I think Charlotte very much has to take someone with the best overall athleticism and availability at number 2, which to me has to, based off mock drafts, be Scoot Henderson. And so if Brandon Miller goes to the Blazers, I think the Blazers, they happen to not only be as good a fit for Brandon Miller, say, over the Hornets, but just pair Brandon Miller alongside Damian Lillard, even though Lillard was pretty high on Scoot Henderson in Scoot Henderson's workout session, that I think Brandon Miller will exceed some expectations, so to speak. And I think right off the bat, start pretty solid in Portland, along with Damian Lillard. And then I guess Simons would be reconsidered to stay, along with, Grant, if he wants to stay, and Nurkic. I mean, that's a pretty solid team to me, even though we've heard trade rumors in regards to Damian Lillard going to Miami or Philadelphia. I think Damian Lillard's not done yet. He's still at a decent age, decent point in his career. Had a 27 player efficiency rating last season and still shot the ball pretty well. I mean, he did maybe almost as good as you say at least Jokic, but even though Jokic didn't have at least a better overall regular season than I expected him to finish out towards the end, but I think maybe test out Lillard's value, Miller's value, along with Simons, just those three next year, and see how everything pans out. I don't know if Damian Lillard wants to wait on a rookie, but I feel Ram Miller right off the bat can at least provide you some three pointers and some good systematic whiz of concepts for the head coach in Portland. So, so I mentioned Brandon Miller, Scoot Henderson, Oscar Thompson, Victor Wembanyama. Now the fifth best player available on my board has to be looking a little bit. Oh, well, this is where I think it really gets interesting, but I mean, everyone's projecting him for some reason to go to the Kings with his brother Keegan Murray, but man, am I a big fan of Chris Murray, the brother of Keegan Murray on the Sacramento Kings. I think Chris Murray can very much have a outstanding career. Just a matter of whether he is on a winning team or a losing team. I think Chris Murray is very much in line, just like his brother, to, as they're saying right here, be NBA ready, be poised to stand out in whatever spot Chris Murray's respective coach puts him in. But I really feel Chris Murray, everything's down pat. When Keegan Murray stepped into Sacramento, he very much changed the outlook and was praised by his head coaches or someone within the Sacramento organization as being a very difference-making player. And so with Chris Murray, I think some of the talent's there, but you know, I think yet again, he's gonna have, just like his brother, a short amount of time. I mean, even though Keegan Murray is likely to be selected higher than Chris Murray come time the 2023 NBA draft, I think Chris Murray will have to do the same as his brother and just react pretty quickly in the NBA. Have to keep a heads up on all the right tasks in his first or second year, a short gap of time, essentially, to stand out and at least own a spot in the NBA. So, you know, I do agree Chris Murray is going to eventually fall to the late round of the first round. But I think there's definitely some sleepers worth mentioning in the first round. One interesting player is Derek Whitehead out of Duke. We had a Whitehead before drafted not too long ago. And with Derek, he missed some time at Duke, just like Kyrie Irving only. Derek Whitehead has slipped all the way down to the latter part of the first round. And game MVP, very probably could very well be. I mean, he's a five-star and no no, well, it says here 6'5", 220 pounds. Think about guys who are 6'5", James Harden comes to mind. I mean, I'm not too sure. I think James Harden may be close to 220 pounds, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I think Whitehead's another player that could be efficient, probably one of, if not maybe the most efficient player in certain areas to go at least outside the lottery this year. Trace Jackson Davis was highly talented in college. Was all over some of the game advertisements this past season, and he's really not caught my eye when I've watched him, but when he plays, as I said here, he is an advanced passer and playmaker. You start to figure with Jokic and Wembanyama, and now Trace Jackson Davis, 6'8", 240 pounds. No, just bigs are becoming much more playmakers themselves, and I know. I don't know if we're gonna ever quite see the evolution where with Wembanyama. We see someone like Wembanyama, for example, take the ball up the court a little bit more and more as time goes along. Like mentioning, he needs to I think, adjust to Popovich's system first. And just like Kawhi Leonard, for example, he without Pop, really became the player he became, and much could be said in the same sense as Wembanyama. Only ball duty should maybe come more extensively within a period of time, possibly in San Antonio. Looking up the board, well, now I think you gotta say, if we're getting a little serious, I think all right, so we got Wembanyama, Henderson, Miller. So I'll rank Thompson as the next one. Amen Thompson. I think he'll just definitely be the best available. Little behind his brother, even though I'm not so high on his chances in the NBA. Well, I'm not really a big fan of Walker, which is why I'm going to say a lot of people give much props to Anthony Black. Really trying to find one other point guard, though. And Whitmore, to me, is really much of a slide. Said to be a 3-and-D player, and if we take a look at the comparison, Jerry Stackhouse and Justice Winslow. So I guess best case scenario is Stackhouse, worst case is Winslow. And yeah, I just think, Villanova doesn't always strike all the time with some really good prospects such as Mikal Bridges right now. And I guess just going to Villanova with more has helped his stock some. And I wouldn't rank him ahead of a player I'm just getting ready to mention. I guess the player, only if I there he is. Where is he? Well, I guess I'll just I guess I'll just say that despite everyone's good opinion on Anthony Black, I think Black will be a good pick wherever he goes. But in the case of Jalen Hood, Schifino, I gotta rank him ahead as the better point guard over Anthony Black, even though he's a little down in terms of height. I think he's just definitely the most good, polished, big tough guard, as it puts here. Me saying myself, he's definitely just not more polished than Black, but polished enough to be relied upon more than I'd say Anthony Black. With Black, he has a good upside for wherever he goes, but I've heard the comparison of Sean Livingston being so tall, not really every point guard Anthony Black's length. We've seen it many drafts these past years with Alfred Payton, DeLon Wright, and I don't know, it's just in the case of Black, he's not as big or tough, I believe, as and just more polished and big tough over the other guy I just mentioned. Over Black. Black just has a good ability, but that's all. I just read out his potential right now is just being good overall to be taken by a good team possibly. And so and I got another big itch. And so, you know, if I'm going to just real quickly rank the last three, I'd say between the list I have here, we've already mentioned others. I mean, I'm not going to be just foolishly obligated to say Walker concerning that he's very up much on this list. I mean, I really feel like as I scroll down, there's just much more talent that comes to mind ranking out the last three. I would definitely say, you know, everyone's talking about Bilal, but we're going to go much into detail again later on, but I can say real quickly, Bilal, of course, play with Wembanyama, and you know, just not too sure if he deserved to be on this list. Not only because he played with Wembanyama, but or not really because he played with Wembanyama, but because he just doesn't really stand out as being so much of a guy that can go somewhere in the lottery and project the scouts as being an overall surprise to some. You know, we saw with Giannis and a couple other international prospects. But then again, I wouldn't get so high on the international circuit so soon. I think some just get caught up, you know, especially as days approach towards the draft and we go, oh no, pick that international prospect. And it just turns out he may very well be to me as of this moment, Boucher of the Raptors, good length and size, but still needs to work out his long-term potential. And hopefully make it in the league. Although rounding out the last three, I'll say Jordan Hawkins right off the bat was the absolute leader, main leaders of UConn, his run, and was one of the most efficient shooters in the tournament. And pass, he ranked second behind Ray Allen in terms of the all-time UConn scoring list and threes. Really, really squares up. I don't know exactly who told the coach, but, you know, he exactly squares up as being a very solid overall spot-up shooter. Just like, I wouldn't like to say fully 100% Ray Allen, But, man, he really impresses me overall by a shooting sense. You know, he just I think I mean, he'll of course start off shoot off screens and relying upon his shot, but Yeah, definitely like to see the Jordan Hawkins. Show off some more of his skills like he did back in college and go on to be a worthy top selection in this draft. And then, you know, I saw him before. I'll give the benefit of the doubt. I'll give him the benefit. Jet Howard, son of Juwan Howard. I think Jet Howard will be another good spot up scorer, and is said to be one of the best scorers in the draft. And so I think, you know, Howard even coming over from, I heard, the Iverson Classic, and really impressing some former NBA veterans, Darius Miles, Steven Jackson, none other than the legend himself, Allen Iverson. So, yeah, especially coming over from Michigan, you know, guy like his size, and we've seen guys over the past like Mitch McGarry stand out, and then, you know, Wagner and Jordan Poole. I mean, some don't always pan out, but, you know, Juwan Howard ran a good program over there so far since the departure of John Beilein, and, yeah, I think his son has the potential to be pretty good. I think he may be as good as his father. I'd have to look more to that as we go into this weekend. And then final one, Cason Wallace. I think Cason Wallace is not getting too much praise or spotlight because even though he's 6'2", he can very much, I believe, play very well on and off the ball, facilitate, one of the best defenders in the SEC. And many talk about other point guards being defensively gifted other than Cason Wallace. I think Wallace maybe should be projected a little bit towards the top 10, at least, I think, in terms of being selected at the 2023 NBA draft. Maybe just a better all-around version than Marcus Smart. Not saying he's possibly going to be ever great defensively like Marcus Smart, but all-around, I think he has the potential to be a good starting role player, just, you know, be asked upon to do anything and play off the bench. So, that's about it. And so let's get into the big news. Let's first see if we got any phone calls. All right. Let's get into it. The more exciting news to me, I think the least exciting news, of course, is what's unfortunately went down with John Morant, which we'll get to. But what happened here? All right. Actually, give me a sec. Actually, you know, we're going to take a break real quick, and when we come back, we'll touch right away on CM Punk. So I was hoping I'd be able to get to it in time, but apparently I couldn't. Here's some of the reactions to later on, probably get to it, but reactions to the CM Punk interview with ESPN, my reaction right away, of course, was that it's basically narcissistic. I've had to deal with myself before, but essentially things were, you know, if you read the interview, just a lot of it was scripted, really. Didn't make much to be a journalistic piece, so to say. Right when I read it from the start, I was like, this is quite different from what I normally read on ESPN, especially most of the articles you possibly tend to see ESPN articulate in print, but it was just still, of course, major shots at the Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Paige. I mean, really, the most one that stood out was the Kenny Omega just taking Omega's words from an interview back in March that that all of it was just unnecessary, the whole fight, the whole tension between the Young Bucks and CM Punk, essentially. And so then Punk, the whole article just then counteracted it and just sort of saying, oh, you know, yeah, like Kenny let me plan out his, you know, moves as a correlate to him, and taking a step further and saying that, you know, really, I'm taking it where I left off, and see, unnecessary too. I didn't find to it be necessary too. Now I've just been sitting by the words of CM Punk trying to get back in touch still with the Bucks and Kenny Omega, as well as Paige being involved as a major target. Once saying that Paige, was going to nearly fight him. So really fight him, essentially, and Punk thought it was worth mentioning that and many other things that needlessly to say, or needlessly inflammatory to say, according to the AEW locker room people back behind the scenes, saying that you know, this definitely is you know, as I would phrase it, as just a possible awakening as to what's to come. CM Punk is set to debut on Collision on Saturday, which means tomorrow on TNT, and it's going to really decide the course of the whole summer, really, this whole show, I believe. Collision. You know, CM Punk says he's got words to say on Collision. And I wouldn't be surprised based off how CM Punk has belittled not only Tony Khan at the media scrum. And, I mean, to do those media scrums, I mean, they should really just stop that, in my opinion, AEW. The, you know, Tony, to me, has made some, I'll just say it, bonehead moves. You know, I really felt one of the hottest times of AEW was really during the pandemic. You know, they really, you know, even for me, just, you know, provide some fans could just all watch on a weekly basis during some of the pandemic. And so then when AEW got tremendously hot from the pandemic shows, they all of a sudden flipped to CM Punk, which, you know, started out good, but then, you know, CM Punk said sometime as you'd say early time put it, just things got really really antagonistic, you know, just really really now. You know, I think to this very day, everyone says the CM Punk debut was really cool, but it was really cool to me. But I really felt the biggest time, probably maybe AEW's peak, was when Bryan Danielson arrived. And after that, you know, Bryan Danielson, of course, had the matches with Kenny Omega, but I felt they didn't really stretch it out as far as they could have, as well in terms of good storytelling or storylines. And so we saw Bryan Danielson, and then, you know, after a while later, just competition seemed to steam down with Cody leaving for WWE, which I still don't get to this day why it's not been reported at length a little bit more, especially after now the CM Punk ESPN interview finally being out of the way. Waking up this morning just saying, oh, is this going to finally just release, get it over with? And so, yeah, now I just wonder why Cody, had tension to begin with Tony Khan. It's been said on occasions what's happened, but I really feel like never really got down to at least the possible full extent of it as to why Cody, Tony Khan eventually had tensions, and Cody went on to eventually leave for WWE, which can be, I guess, an entirely different story for a different day that's being said as to be obvious with the Young Bucks, Adam Page, Kenny Omega, tension with CM Punk. Moreover, Eddie Kingston, I think there's another guy to be involved in this too. I mean, there are many guys working in Dynamite, and then it's been reported that sometimes CM Punk's going to come over to Dynamite, and it's just, you know, such should not be the Young Bucks or the rest of the Elite at Dynamite. So I don't know what's going to happen in London. They're going to have another fight. And just this time, CM Punk going to just meet halfway with the Bucks, you know, in a much longer hallway in the London State O2 Stadium, I think, and just come nose to nose. I mean, I just think it's obviously a shame, because at this point, I'll really just take anything to enjoy wrestling from a time-to-time basis. But in the case of what's happened, especially what's happened over years with the demise of WCW, and I could essentially say TNA, even though it's now called Impact Wrestling, which I said on Twitter, I think they should really change the name. I just think the name doesn't really stand out as being also fabulous. Just pop, blues pop. Open, widening the eyes. So let's see real quick if I got a text. Damn it. Like I said, Collision to premiere tomorrow on TNT. Maybe Jay White, Juice Robinson, they get over more tomorrow, but I gotta say, despite what CM Punk says, you know, as he put it, just still goes out, does business, and puts out, you know, essentially his own business in front of the whole world. And so we'll really see if, you know, CM Punk does, for example, put out business. And I put out business, but real good show. If it could be a real good show, I mean, maybe the next week I'll watch. But I think, you know, tomorrow has to strike good, you know, pretty good, and in order for AEW to very much see if you're like me, tune in on a more consistent basis to Collision. So didn't want to spend too much time today, but wrap up with the final topic today, which is Ja Morant. And real quickly, I'm gonna just make a text. So hang on 1 second. Hang on 1 second. Oh, sorry about that. 1 second, gotta get a sip of water. Just looking real quick here. Oh, wow. Well, I saw it the other day, but just some of Volpe's most particularly OPS has gone down, and there's already speculation. Not too surprised, because hey, look, I was too high on him initially, but Volpe said to be a speculation of a demotion, even though Hal Steinbrenner has gone on to quote zero discussions about saying sort of stop down down in AAA. So he's definitely an attraction. Although, hey, you know, what I say a couple days ago, the Yankees are gonna, no matter what, I think, fall short this year yet again, and that's certainly not good on the reflection of not only Steinbrenner, but Brian Cashman. I think really a lot of overhaul has to be possibly considered, not only with the roster. Guys like Donaldson, Volpe, Hicks, you know, a lot of people doubted, you know, Rochelle, look at him now, Gio Rochelle, he's doing pretty good with the Angels, and the Angels, believe it or not, on the run, just like the Yankees are in third, but the Angels just stand a more better chance, I feel, right now in their division with the Houston Astros plummeting the way I expected this year. And then the Rangers, I think the Rangers will eventually reach a playoff berth, but with the Angels, I could see it really a battle between the Angels and Rangers possibly. Although yeah, and then I was just thinking, Was it Oswaldo Cabrera? It was Oswaldo, so I'd say yeah, there are many Yankees who just yeah, with especially Judge now, I think it's been very much early for diehard Yankee fans to possibly learn by now that yeah, possible overhaul. I don't know about with Yankee fans, but a possible overhaul with me would be certainly the nice route for them to go. If at some point Volpe is demoted, for example, I mean, that's just again, like I said, a main attractive piece to many Yankee fans that attend games, and you know, many people that were not only the attendance but organization was hoping he'd have some sort of impact, you know, have a big impact. Although, you know, looking here, you know, AL leaders, some offensive stats right now include Bo Bichette. I mean, I like to see Guerrero Jr. just having yet another good year as well, but I really like to see much Bo Bichette, or, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be tremendously better with the gifts I feel he has, and help Toronto without us, you know, Manoah at least right now. Manoah gone, but you add in one addition in Varsho. Varsho's been a smart addition, to say the very least, for the Toronto Blue Jays. Just the way that whole lineup is structured out, I really like Toronto's chances. Article read out today that the St. Louis Cardinals are likely to sell possibly at the trade deadline. It would be an interesting move. I mean, right now, Edmund has been picking it up as of late. Hit a home run, just as I saw the other day. Playing the Mets, in fact, just saw on the screen. And yeah, you know, they got some good relief pitchers. Wouldn't be surprised if maybe we saw a few of their bullpen leave, and possibly, you know, I don't know. They got a, of course, yeah, some huge veterans like Goldschmidt and Arenado. And based off the way their contracts are structured, I feel they can get possibly something back. Even if a Met trade Arenado, I mean, I don't think Arenado is going to be traded, but Arenado, I think he's due at least $300 million. I think be a little bit up there in range for some teams. I mean, maybe one team out there will go for him, but who knows? It should be interesting, the trade deadline. More extensive coverage of Major League Baseball on Sports Kingdom here throughout the summer. And so, really, I was hoping I'd make it in time today at 12, but had a big storm outside, and then wow. Expected to come on at 12:30, but then at the very least. But then read the CM Punk article and just happened to look into a couple things before starting. So Perez and Gosman on the mound for Toronto, Texas tonight. Hendricks pitcher right now against the Orioles. I think Hendricks is only possibly. I assume the Cubs are at least in better position than some teams right now in the NL Central, but based off hearing and seeing last time, the Chicago Cubs not off to the start I have possibly expected. Do I think they have a real shot yet again at reaching the postseason? Yeah, but I kind of question what the mindset is of the Chicago Cubs general manager come time the trade deadline. I think based off just seeing Hendricks right now and knowing he's having one of his best seasons into his late seasons of his career right now at Chicago. You know, I always had faith in him going all the way back to the World Series in 2016, thought he could have very much pulled out a much better solid run with the Cubs down the stretch of his later career. But now that the Cubs are winning more and Bellinger, some players coming up through the farm system, like a Morrow, for example, he just happened to head out to or just get a get notched away by Cole Irvin, formerly of the Philadelphia Phillies, now at the Orioles. Irvin, of course, making a good impact. Seems like the Orioles like a good amount of the Phillies a little bit. Cole Irvin, then Kyle Gibson. I haven't really seen Kyle Gibson play this year. But, certainly look at as I was saying, the Angels. I watched the Angels and Shohei Ohtani last night. Shohei Ohtani leading the league in home runs, AL and OPS, and just certainly compared to Mike Trout. I mean, Mike Trout, I think, I don't know, maybe awaiting a postseason run at this point, really. I think maybe he's just oh, how about that? Joe Girardi broadcasting for the Cubs locally. I just think why would the Angels really want to trade Ohtani right now, actually? We've heard rumors about Ohtani leaving, but I think Ohtani, really, stands a good chance at continuing his momentum, success, and leading the Angels to a possible playoff berth, at least. If they can go to the playoffs, then I really believe they can make a run. I really do. I mean, Mark Close just got their first save, and Walsh has been tremendously poor for them at first base. Some notable players like Geo, and then Mickey Moniak, former first overall pick. I don't know. I mean, I think Angels have certainly had the opportunities other years, but this opportunity opening up may have to take the risk with keeping Ohtani and making a postseason run. Last time I recall, I remember first year watching baseball, my young age, Mike Socha was the manager, still vividly in my head, and they went on to win the 2002 World Series, and a nice time for the Angels. The Angels really, I think, have a nice ballpark. I always like to go there. I think they have a really nice ballpark. You rank the California ballparks, I think. AT&T Stadium is probably first because there's been some historic moments there, and they've been a real good franchise this century, and that ballpark wasn't invented not too long ago. Or I guess you'd say constructed, you know. And now they got the canoes, the wall out and right. And then if I've been there, I'd tell you, about other certain kind of amenities they offer, but yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool overall, even though I'm not in California. And then you got the Oakland A's pretty much in dead last, really. We're just going to put it briefly. Giants first, A's last, even though I like to see the A's. I mean, did you know the A's were once before... Previously in Philadelphia, Philadelphia not coming over to Oakland tonight, and I'll be watching that game. Bryce Harper said much things about them going to Vegas, his hometown, and I won't be too surprised. And being a Philly fan many of these years and coming to get to know Bryce Harper, I won't be too surprised if he doesn't wish and goes and plays for Vegas, says he'll retire Philly, end his career as a Philly, but I'm not too sure about that, especially about things are pretty much going with Vegas. You know, Vegas being a hot spot, and the Vegas Golden Knights just going on to have just a tremendous hot run there, and in Vegas, you know, just really all things have worked out so far for the Vegas Golden Knights, the Raiders, soon to be A's, even though, you know, I've always dug much up of the history. You know, I hear that despite of what's going on, you know, cats roaming around the field or sex going on out in the left field upper deck, and then just so many things. I still think, despite the stadium, despite frustration with ownership by now, I'd still say, like I've been hearing, and I truly believe it from the get-go, that A fans have always, no matter if they've always been there or not, they've always been passionate, the diehard A fans. And I for one, you know, when they've been on their runs, I've been really passionate about guys like Josh Donaldson, Josh Reddick, Bob Melvin, and then who won Manager of the Year at one point with the A's, and then all the efforts Billy Bean has tried to strike with the A's. And you look into the Moneyball movie, which we had Casey Bond on with playing Chad Bradford, David Justice, Jeremy Giambi, and I remember Sonny Gray. Yeah, just I remember some fond moments, you know, with the A's. But as Bryce Harper said, they got to really just, despite what's being said, change up the name and move to Vegas. So, and, you know, like I said previously before we got started the show to begin with, this is just definitely, at least with me, a very touchy, but yet thing that could have been avoided. You know, I in essence just find it to be really bittersweet for some. I think the Memphis fan base, you know, they really want a player like John Morant to be on the court as much as he can, considering what he could bring to the table. And yeah, I think it's unfortunate. Maybe just put it that way. It's just unfortunate. But yeah, it's, you know, just I think, you know, I was trying to upload the Ja Morant audio session where I discussed the initial suspension of Ja Morant, initial talks of suspension. But I think Ja Morant, he will either learn from, at this point, he'll either learn from this or not. But like I said a very long time ago, Adam Silver had essentially suspended Ja Morant. So we're saying 25 games before, unlike 8, and suspend him at least for the remainder of this past season. I don't think John Moran should have necessarily been on the court playing playoff B. I think could have been avoided, Really, I think we'll see if we have any more callers or things to talk about. Real quickly, can comment in the Facebook section, tweet, post, just follow us on social media, including Blog Talk Radio here, Sports Kingdom, as you're listening to right now, blogtalkradio.com/Sports Kingdom. So like I said before, we're going to revamp the site. Some more, SportsKingdom.us, SportsKingdomUS.com, have some more leisure time over the weekend. And end with one final note, and that's the NBA screwed up, but essentially so did Ja Morant's. This about does it for Sports Cam. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Got to go do some things now. So thank you guys and peace out.